Welcome back, everyone, to Being Curious with Nomi. On this podcast, we let ourselves be joyfully, playfully curious about the many ways of knowing self. So if you are a self-aware introspect like us, you are in the right place. My name is Madeline. I am a certified professional coach, and I will let my lovely co-hosts introduce themselves.
I'm Maggie. I'm a coach.
And I'm Cynthia. I'm a Nomi coach and a licensed mental health counselor.
If you have listened to the podcast before, you will also notice that there is one voice missing this week. She's not feeling well. Ellen is not with us today, but we are really excited to welcome her back for our next podcast. So definitely send her well wishes, but hopefully by the time you listen to this, she will be on the mend.
Yes.
So let's dive into today's topic. So one of the things that we talk about a lot on this podcast, being coaches and therapists in the room, is how wonderful, annoying, joyous, and irritating it is to have the capacity to hold the space and do the work for and with others, and sometimes fall into the patterns ourselves and not be able to recognize them as quickly as we might hope. Never mind the fact that we wish we were just exempt from all of it. Today, I thought we would actually come from a place of vulnerability, even as professionals, and I would like to ask the curious question to you all and myself: what patterns have you been falling into lately?
That's a juicy one. There's so many. The one that comes most to mind for me is being too much in my head space and not enough in my heart space.
Mm. Ooh, I'm going to need you to expand on that one.
I'm a very intellectual person, right? I love knowledge and I love to think through. And so sometimes I am not in my wisest mind because I'm rationalizing everything. That's problematic for me in a whole bunch of reasons. First of all, it's very problematic for me in my relationships. It's problematic when I'm trying to make a decision because I actually don't. I just keep rethinking and coming at different angles and whatever. And it's not really authentic for me because a lot of where my values live is in my heart space, in my feeling space. And yep, even the therapist can sometimes find her emotions problematic and would rather just stay in her head.
Oh, so true. I think it's almost even harder as a professional because you know the theories and the concepts and the why. Honestly, especially in our world, it feels like that should be enough. It feels like it should be enough to just know why and that you can logic your way out of it. And so as a professional who like knows the why extra, then you really should be able to acknowledge your way out of it.
No, absolutely. So that's mine. What about you guys?
The one that I am bumping into repeatedly right now is putting my needs on the back burner and anticipating other people's needs and like guessing before they're even sharing what they need and making myself like overly available and committing to things I don't necessarily want to do, which is an oldie but a goodie for me.
One of the questions that kind of pops into my head is, how do you know it's overly? Part of who I like to think I am is someone who's available, especially being a helper. And I know that you being a coach, Maggie, probably similar things. So how did you determine I'm overly thinking, but how did you determine overly available?
Because it's coming from fear.
Okay.
So it's not coming from authentically wanting to like reach out and help somebody, or it's coming from a place of, if I don't do this, I don't matter, or I am not being helpful, therefore I don't matter. So it's coming from fear.
Risk and consequences, it sounds, is where your brain is sitting. Like it's in risk assessment mode.
Yes. It's in reactionary mode.
Yeah. That's really interesting. My original pattern that I wanted to bring to this conversation was the same as yours, Mom. So for the service of our listeners, I'll pick a different pattern because there's many of them. I do have many to choose from. And I'm going to pick the pattern that I'm a really special snowflake. This is a pattern that pops up a lot. So what I mean by that is that my problems are unique. Everything I have to do has to be original. That's a pattern I fall into a lot. So like, I have to reinvent the wheel. I have to figure it out myself. I have to do it alone. And it stops me from asking for help. It stops me from even identifying what help I need. So it's already one step back from even asking for the help. And it makes me feel super alone and isolated in the shame about my issues and my challenges because I tell myself that I'm so original. No one else has these problems. So I'm alone in my suffering as well.
Suffocating.
Yeah, wow. Very much. Yeah.
I think I feel similarly with my intellectualizing, right? It makes me feel alone in my suffering as well and shameful that, listen, I'm a trained professional. Why can I give these invitations to others? But at the same time, it's difficult to accept the invitation for myself because I'm so special. I'm just so unique, right? And that's not a good thing. And so like you, Maggie, I go into the fear of that's not a good special. It's a shameful, guilty, fearful special.
I like what you opened up with when you were talking about the fact that you were living more from like your head space versus your heart space, because I feel like that is the thread between all three of our problems that are bubbling up right now.
Yeah. For sure. And I think part of that is because the three of us are natural doers, which is a very jargony word. What I mean by doers is that we live in a world and are trained within systems that tell us to just keep doing things, taking action, achieving, etc. That's headspace. It's I need to move faster, or I need to do more, or I need to do, rather than realigning. And realigning is really that heart space, which, by the way, the other day I found out the most fascinating thing, which is that there are 40,000 neurons that mirror brain neurons in your heart. There's a little brain in your heart. Did you know this?
I hadn't heard about the little brain in my heart, but I know where there's another little brain, which is in your gut.
Yeah, it's amazing. And like this is actually old news. They found it out in the 90s, the little brain in your heart thing.
Yeah.
But they've been able to, for the first time in the past couple of years, do a 3D map of it. So they've actually been able to see the little brain in the heart. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing a lot more research around like how it connects with the polyvagal nerve, and also that your little heart makes decisions independent of your brain. So like it basically is a nuance machine. So hey, don't quote me. I'm not a neuroscientist. So please go actually read an article on this instead of just listening to me. But from what I understand, when the brain sends a signal to the heart like decides how much to listen to it in a way.
Yeah.
It dials it. And a lot of the research that's driving this is because of heart disease. They're trying to figure out how to actually press the right buttons to help with heart disease, and rather than all or nothing. But I found that so fascinating because it really is the heart space. And the little brain and the heart really matter.
I mean, I would even contribute that I believe, and I don't know if there's a paper on it, but probably, I think it's our heart space where our emotions live. When they're in the head space, they become problematic because I don't like the information that they're giving me. I think they're intruding to my rational brain. And so therefore, that's, I think, sometimes why we do this disconnect between the heart and the head. And then, of course, if you do a lot, if you look at a lot of our religious doctrines and things like that, they'll say the soul lives in the heart space as well.
I feel like even in our current like patterns that we just recognized, like the heart is playing a role, though. Mm. So we're not letting it be like the driver right now. But all three of us, I think the reason why these are like uncomfortable places to be is because our heart is like pounding like, hey, this is not your wise mind. This is not your authentic space. There's a disconnect there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Part of this as well, it's a word that you used a while ago, which is you said, Mom, I'm not accepting the invitation. And the word acceptance is really key here because there's this quote that's like, emotions play out in the theater of the body and feelings play out in the theater of the mind. And the difference between an emotion and a feeling is meaning. And this is where I think we get ourselves in trouble, is we place such an emphasis on meaning instead of just letting things be. And acceptance is letting things be. And it's not that meaning isn't important. It's just not the only information. And it's so important to just let things be sometimes. And this was when I'm in overthinking traps, that's like the one thing I tell myself most, which is you don't have to figure out why that thing's gonna work, Madeline. Just do it. You don't have to know why that mindfulness grounding technique works. Just do it and then figure out why.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's true. And then the brain follows.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's right. Not about head or heart. It's like maybe if you're head first, stop diving in head first and start diving in heart first and letting your brain catch up once in a while.
It's like a belly flop.
It is.
It is like a belly flop. That's so real.
Well, and maybe that's why we're so resistant to it, because it feels like a belly flop. It feels very vulnerable. It feels like it could hurt more.
It has a big splash, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, she said splash. You let me enter into something. I was like gearing up for this. She said splash, there's water. They both know my metaphor that I'm going to share that I wrote to myself the other day. Because when we talk about resistance, we've already said the word like 15 times, which is shame, right? And this room, there admittedly is shame because this is our profession, right? So it's the I should know better, the shitting all over yourself, I should know better. Or for example, if you've been to therapy before or you've done coaching before or you've read self-help books and you like know the knowing of the lesson, why can't you just do the thing? Shame territory. That's all shame territory. And we feel you. We are very there. And the other day when I was in this shame territory, this metaphor came to mind that I'm going to read to you, which is, imagine that you're a fish swimming against the current and in the opposite direction to other fish. It is exhausting and tiring. You need a rest. And you're swimming against the current, so now and again, when you're so exhausted to the point of completely stopping, you drift back with the current of the water. It feels like regression, but you're still facing the direction you want to go. You just need to start swimming again. And next time, learn that maybe you need to adjust your pace so that next time you can slow down and potentially stay where you are or slowly move forward as opposed to stopping and moving backwards. And the word that this was triggered from this was the word regression, was this feeling and fear and shame around going backwards. Yeah. And it was interesting because I've had this conversation with you before, Mom, where you've said we can't go backwards. Or I've seen Maggie's video on TikTok, which was like,
don't tell me.
But the thing is, I think we have to admit that we can go backwards because our patterns are our patterns. And we've often held our patterns longer than we've held the new thing. And it's hard to break any habit. The key is not that you don't go backwards. It's that you stop focusing on whether you're going backwards or forwards for a second and focus on which direction you're facing. And you're still facing the direction you want to go. True. Just start moving.
No, absolutely. And of course, it brings back the quote I used in the last podcast from Dory, just keep swimming. Oh my gosh, that Dory, she just is apropos everywhere.
Mom's review of Finding Nemo, that Dory, she's apropos.
She's so helpful. Right.
If you guys want to put that on the cover of the DVD, oh my God, I feel like that dates me now. But the cover of the DVD, then just let us know and we'll sign over the rights to that testimonial.
Right. Yeah. But one of the distinctions that I'm just going to pipe in is that, of course, we can move backwards just like we can move forwards. But when we get into a mindset that I'm going back, I'm back in that spot in the past that I didn't want to be and I worked really hard to get out of, that's the part that's really not possible because we are always in perpetual forward motion. It can feel similar, super similar to what we experienced when we were 10 or even last week. But I remind myself, my goal is to take the knowledge in the here and now, the knowledge that I'm bringing from the past, and apply it anew to keep moving forward, just like your analogy said.
It begs the question of where's your focus, the place or the direction? And so when we're in fear, we tend to be thrashing against the location. And that's where acceptance comes in. It might be a location I've been before. I've been to this place before. And I know this isn't a place that I like to be. But I'm going to have to accept that I'm here. Because if I just focus on willing myself to not be here, it's not going to happen. You can't like magically transport yourself out of that by willpower to not be there. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to be there, you have to leave it and re-engage with the direction. Get your focus off the location. And the way we re-engage with direction is first through acceptance. I am here. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be here. So I'm going to go be somewhere else. Where do I want to be? How do I get there? How can I start moving toward those things? And what do I need to get there as well? But I think that focusing on it from this direction enables us to actually get out of the pattern rather than just understanding the pattern to the nth degree.
True. The other thing that this whole acceptance brings in is that once we can do that, we can accept, then we can say, okay, how can I use my mind, my heart, my gut, my body in its wholeness to help me get to a different place?
What I know about myself is that when I am in this mindset of feeling like I'm going backwards or I'm like back in a pattern, I mentally, logically, my brain knows it's not where I want to be. But I'm often so worn down and fatigued that to try to vision like where I do want to be is really a heavy lift. What has been helpful for me is instead like calling in my values as like the gasoline in the car to get to start moving forward. So asking myself, is staying in this pattern in service of my values and who I want to be?
I'm really grateful that you brought up values because I just did a little video on TikTok about this where there's this conversation going around where this woman said we should be able to ask people for rides to the airport, even to LAX, even in rush hour traffic. And a whole bunch of people have been talking about how capitalism has broken down our sense of community. And I agree with them, but they were all just analyzing the breakdown of community. And no one, at least no one on my For You page, was talking about how to stop, how to fix it. In this case, what I talked about was how the breakdown of community is because we've broken down in the ingredient of community, which is connection. And that's because, in my opinion, we base connection off of doing things. And then when you're systemically burnt out and chronically fatigued, doing anything sounds like a bad time. So we stop doing things to connect. So we feel less connected. So we inherently, our communities start to fail. We're not going out to the places even where we would be building community. And so those businesses close down, for example. But to get out of that, you need to start connecting again. And it's really hard to feel like you can self-start for anything when you're feeling incredibly depleted. But values are the place to start. So in this case, the value is connection, right? And you have to ask yourself, what makes me feel this value, right? What makes me feel connected? And in my case, I said, what makes me feel connected is when something that matters to me matters to someone else. And that's why we do hobbies, right? You have a hobby, I have a hobby, we do a hobby together. In my case, when I was thinking about how depleted I feel to be able to connect with others, I would think to myself, how can I recognize that something that matters to me matters to someone else so I can build a spark of connection that gives me a little bit of energy? And it's listening to a podcast where people talk about something that matters to me like this. And that makes me feel a sense of connection and also helps me recognize my community, even if they're not people physically in the room with me. And that little spark of energy and that little spark of connection enables me to maybe do the heavier lift next time. And once I do that, it might be a little heavier lift. And it's like a little microdosing, self-reinforcing, cascading effect. But it starts with the value. So I really love that you brought that up, Maggie. And in your case, with your pattern around needs, what is the value that you want to bring in to help get yourself out of this spiral or have done?
I would probably pull in my value of being helpful. Some of the things I'm doing while I'm stuck in this pattern are helpful. However, because they are wearing me down and exhausting me, it is actually hindering my ability to be fully present and be helpful in a way that's meaningful to others, because I'm guessing their needs. I'm putting mine on the back burner. And so I'm not being my most helpful self. It's not that I'm not being helpful at all. It's just coming from the wrong place and is kicking my butt and making me feel like garbage, which then is not ultimately helpful because I'm not feeling my best.
I really appreciate that, Maggie, because I talk a lot about this to myself as well as others. Is first of all, try not to make assumptions, because that is a slippery slope. And then the second thing is creating a win. Sometimes we're so focused, you use the word overly, and overly means I'm only focused on creating a win for the other person, and I haven't put me in the equation. So when I don't put me in the equation, I'm creating a win-lose. And so the answer isn't, right, to flip it around and then just take care of my needs, and because that doesn't feel well, because then that doesn't feel like, quote unquote, you're living your values, right? Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that, because sometimes I get caught in that because I'm like, oh, if I'm creating a win for them, then what's the problem? And that is over time, a burnout. We always want to do a win-win.
You just said the word overly. Earlier, you called what you do overthinking.
Yep.
You said overly available. Overly is too much. Mm-hmm. So something else I want to bring up here, and I love that you chose the value of helpfulness, because often our patterns are too much of a good thing. Mm-hmm. Because especially as introspective people who know ourselves, we know what we want. And what you were saying, Mom, is you're so focused on that, that you're forgetting all the other values. And so you're, that's enough slices, like putting so many slices of this thing that you're like eating a whole apple pie instead of a little apple, a little pumpkin, a little pecan, a little whatever. For me, my too much is an aggressive amount of creativity. Too much creativity is I'm like, actually, it's not that creative. It's a pattern, and you can just benefit from the fact that it is typical. Mm-hmm. And for you with overthinking, it's like too much intellect, too much meaning, right? Finding meaning in things matters to you. Too much meaning. Mm-hmm. And like with you, Maggie, you're saying you're overly available. It's being too helpful or too generous to the point you're hurting yourself. And I think that this is what's so interesting about values, is that we can use them as beating sticks for ourselves.
Yeah. There's always a flip side of every coin. Very so true. When does it go into the dark side versus it's still on the light side? And that is for each of us to know about ourselves.
Because it helps us to recalibrate to what we do want. Knowing what we don't want can be helpful as long as it helps us to get to what we do want rather than getting to further what we don't want.
Yeah.
I'd love to close the episode where each of us share something about how we are moving out of these patterns. One of the big aha moments I've had is that when I'm in the pattern, it's not the time to analyze the pattern. My desire is to figure it out because I love being self-aware. I love figuring out my stuff. I love solving those little puzzles and articulating what it is. That's not the time. When I'm in it, I need to just be focused on doing the work, getting out of it so that I can look back at it with my wise mind. If I'm in the weeds, I can't get the meta view. So my guesses might be good guesses, but it's going to keep me in the weeds. So what I'm doing to get out of my pattern is getting out of my pattern. It's focusing on doing things without needing to, even if I understand them because they've worked for me before, I'm trying something new, but just recentering myself on some mantras that resonate with me, recentering myself on my coaching. So I go to my coach with these things. It's a great time for coaching. Nourishing my ability to take action rather than my desire and my drive to find meaning. Yet.
I'm getting in touch with my spiritual self. I'm getting in touch with my intuition. And my intuition comes in where I take my brain away and I start just asking the universe, something larger than me. So maybe I'm doing a little more of my oracle cards. And Maggie taught me this technique where you just really look at the card. My intellectual side wants to go right to that book that gives me a little synopsis of what it could mean. But what I do is I look at the card and then I'm quiet with myself and I'm just like, what's coming up for me? And I do almost a word dump. I have a piece of paper and I just write all the words and I really tap in to my gut, to my intuition. And then I see what emotions come up as I'm looking at this card. Now and again, when I'm getting wrapped up in my thinking, I call my trusted coaches, and you guys are very kind, and you'll challenge me and say, hey, what do you feel about that? What's your gut telling you about that? What's your heart telling you about that? What's your spirit telling you about that? As opposed to, you've told us all the things your head's telling you about that.
The coaches in our lives know the right questions to ask us. And I think that's just such a unburdening, in it my is. Mind at least, is mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I don't need to yeah. know the questions to ask mm-hmm. myself, because there's someone mm-hmm. else in my life that I trust to be able to ask the questions. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's not that I can't ask the questions to myself. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's going to take a while for me to get there if mm-hmm. I try and do it myself. And I'd rather not stay in this horrible place any longer than I have to.
Absolutely. That's why the therapeutic alliance and the coaches alliance and then natural supports, right? Think about your very vulnerable and close friendships. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What yeah. about you, Maggie?
Well, you've all just segued perfectly. I think that's mine, is that I've had to really get brave, and I had to get my spiral like on the pages of my journal. But then I realized that I was just sitting in it in my own brain and stewing. And so I had to start like sharing the fact that I was spiraling with my trusted humans. And even though it's very uncomfortable, because I'm the person who wants to be able to solve all my own problems and issues, like I'm not at a point in this moment where I can get myself to that other side without a little accountability and without some loving, gentle shoves in the right direction.
Very true. It's a brave thing. It's a brave thing to ask for help. And I think the reason that I keep choosing bravery is because the relief, the payoff, when I go to my coach, is so big. It's so big. Yeah. It's so fun. Yeah. I've partnered with my bravery enough times that I can trust that the payoff will be there because I found the right person. And I think that's one other dimension here, which is, you said it, Mom. I'm talking about it. Maggie just said it. It is important to find the right person. It's not just coaching or just therapy that's going to help. It's doing it with the right person. That's why a huge thing that we believe in within Nomi is making sure that people can find the right person, whether that's one of the four of us or that's someone else. Right. We encourage anyone who's just looking for support but might not know where to go and Googling it seems overwhelming, get on one of our calendars anyways, because we have networks where we can reach out even if it's not us. I think it's really important to say that, because a lot of times it can feel like if you go and you talk to a coach, you're going to waste their time or you're going to disappoint them if you don't want to work with them, but it stops you from getting support. So here's your little permission slip that the three of us give you permission to get on our calendars, and whether we can help you or someone else can, we are here for you, because the more support you get, the more you can support yourself and the other people in your life. And that's actually what we care about most.
Yes.
So creating that ripple effect.
Yes. Absolutely.
Without further ado, we're going to close with a quote, and I'm going to steal the quote show for this episode. Sorry, Mom, but it is accompanied by some artwork, and it's by an artist called Blues by Tuba. And it says, "Some paths cannot be discovered without getting lost."
I love that.
Which is a whole thing to chew on that we didn't even pick apart in this episode. It's your inquiry. It's your homework for this episode, is to take away that quote and see how it lands for you.
Yeah.
One final invitation is that if you are curious about how we can help you in any way, shape, or form, to please go to nomi.com. You can also check out the show notes for links. We would love to get in touch with you, and you can hop directly on one of our calendars in the show notes as well. We are very grateful that you are with us every couple of weeks. We will be back in 2 weeks, hopefully with Ellen. Until next time.
Be well.
Thanks for listening to Being Curious with Nomi. Did you learn something new or feel inspired by something in this episode? Then please pass it along.
Sharing our podcast is the best way you can help us to inspire more self-awareness and curiosity in the world. And if you're curious about how we can support you, head to nomi.com to see how we could work together one-on-one. We know it takes a village, and we're grateful you're a part of ours. This is Cynthia,
Maggie,
and Madeline
asking you to be good to you.